These voices made headlines this week.
That the revolutionary teachers and students of Peking University are the closest followers of Chairman Mao.
The process will be long and arduous.
These are people who have been known to have long police records, dope addicts, drunkards, winos, and just general scum.
The country over which Bon Charlie presides went back home with its proverbial tail between its legs.
The ABC Radio Network presents Voices in the Headlines, the sounds of the news this week gathered from around the world by the staff of ABC Radio News.
This is Fred Foy with Voices in the Headlines.
The revolutionary teachers and students of Peking University are the closest followers of Chairman Mao, thus setting an example for the whole nation.
That was the voice of Radio Peking, the voice of Communist China, praising the activities of the Red Guard, groups of young communists out to make China a pure communist state, free of the influences of the West. The world had a look at Red China this week through the eyes of Miao Chenpai, a communist Chinese official who defected in Syria and asked for asylum in the United States. In New York, through a translator, Miao Chenpai talked about the Red Guard.
The so-called the Red Guard was an instrument of the Chinese communist leadership to use them to attain the aim to purge the alienated elements.
One of those so-called alienated elements has been the Catholic Church in Red China, subjected in recent days to attacks by the Red Guard, attacks which took a new turn this week, as reported by Radio Tokyo.
Diplomatic sources in Peking said that 8 foreign nuns have been expelled from communist China and left Peking by train on Sunday night. The nuns had been expelled for carrying out illegal espionage activities.
When those nuns crossed into Hong Kong, ABC's Dave Snell was there to report.
Even as they crossed the border bridge into Hong Kong, there were about 100 youth chanting and singing Maoist slogans. One of the nuns, 85-year-old Sister Mary O'Sullivan, fainted and was carried across the final bridge on a railroad baggage cart.
That nun, Sister Amon, formerly Mary O'Sullivan, died later in the day that she and the 7 other nuns left Red China. But the Red Guard weren't directing their anger only at religion. On Monday, the Red Guard held a huge rally in Peking, a demonstration that brought this from Radio Moscow.
Things have even gone so far as the organization of mass outrages in front of the Soviet embassy in Peking.
That Radio Moscow broadcast, monitored by ABC News, put the blame on Red China for what Moscow called attempts to split the communist movement. And while the communist world was shaking at its foundations in the growing split between Moscow and Peking, the chief architect of Western disunity was on a visit to Cambodia.
President Charles de Gaulle, accompanied by Mrs. de Gaulle, arrive in Phnom Penh, the capital of Cambodia. And on hand here at the Phnom Penh airport is one of the most fantastic welcoming ceremonies that I have ever seen for any dignitary.
ABC News correspondent Sam Jaffe was in Cambodia for the ceremony surrounding de Gaulle's visit to former French Indochina and a visit with Cambodia's Prince Sihanouk, a visit marked by elaborate public ceremonies, as Sam Jaffe described.
The French national anthem, the Marseillaise, being sung by several thousand Cambodian students here in Phnom Penh's gigantic stadium that seats 80,000 people and is full to capacity. A beautiful card display by thousands of other students shows a huge French flag and a huge Cambodian flag side by side. French President Charles de Gaulle delivers a major foreign policy statement here in Phnom Penh Stadium, Cambodia.
In his speech, de Gaulle talked about Vietnam and said that peace in Vietnam cannot be achieved until United States forces are pulled out. But there was no indication that de Gaulle's words in Cambodia would have any effect in Washington. Typical of the Washington attitude toward de Gaulle were the words of Missouri's Democratic Senator Stuart Symington.
General de Gaulle is working against us as hard as he can in Europe and the rest of the world economically, and that he's working as hard as he can in Europe and the rest of the world against us diplomatically. And I would imagine that, from what I've heard, that some of his people have been working against us militarily.
And as for de Gaulle's suggestion in Cambodia that the United States follow France's example in Algeria, Senate Minority Leader Everett Dirksen had this to say.
Well, that's not the only thing that Bon Charlie has said. He has been dropping these pearls of Francais wisdom all over the universe. Of course, you've got to remember, the country over which Bon Charlie presides went back home with its proverbial tail between its legs.
There was no evidence at all that the United States was ready to turn tail in Vietnam. In fact, the evidence pointed toward a stronger American effort there. Secretary of State Dean Rusk went before the Senate Military Preparedness Subcommittee and talked about the search for a Vietnam peace.
We see no present prospect that they are prepared to bring that matter to the conference table or to take part in de-escalation or to turn away from their announced intention of seizing South Vietnam. That situation could change up or down.
The Vietnam War, the subject for President Johnson also, as he talked about Vietnam and its place in the overall policy of the Chinese Communists.
Make no mistake about the character of this war. Our adversaries have done us at least one great service. They have described this war for what it is in unmistakable terms. It is meant to be the opening salvo in a series of bombardments, or as they are called in Peking, wars of liberation.
The president's views of the war and the necessity for defeating communist China's wars of liberation were at odds with another man's view of the world. United Nations Secretary General U Thant announced that Vietnam was the number one reason for U Thant's decision to retire as UN Secretary General. Many UN nations, including the United States, expressed disappointment that U Thant wants to quit. And United States Ambassador Arthur Goldberg summed up the American outlook on Thant's resignation.
The United States has complete confidence in U Thant, and along with all other members of the United Nations, persists in the hope that the Secretary General will accede to the desire of the membership that he consent to the extension of his term of office.
While Ambassador Goldberg was expressing that policy regarding U Thant, the Secretary of State was showing no signs that American policies in Vietnam, which U Thant finds regrettable, would change. At the American Legion Convention in Washington, Dean Rusk summed up the foundations of American foreign policy.
The paramount purpose of our foreign policy and of the armed forces which support it is to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Now, if a hard choice has to be made between liberty and peace, we shall choose liberty, just as we have done in the past.
Dean Rusk was but one of a number of prominent Americans talking about Vietnam in speeches to the American Legion. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Earl Wheeler, pulled no punches.
The process will be long and arduous. It will suffer setbacks from time to time, and it will call for one quality which we Americans too often stock in short supply: patience.
Former Vice President Richard Nixon was realistic but hopeful.
It is the most difficult war in America's history. But if we do our job, I say to you that defeating aggression in South Vietnam will have been America's finest hour. Thank you.
AFL-CIO President George Meany talked about the so-called Vietniks and was defiant.
These elements, which are more noisy than numerous, would have the world believe that the war in Vietnam is President Johnson's war, that it is a reactionary war, and that America is seeking imperialist advantage and domination. I know of no more dangerous package of outright falsehoods.
The commander of the American Legion, Eldon James, talked about what he thinks ought to be done militarily in Vietnam.
We're going to have to show more force and more determination. The Ho Chi Minh Trail is one land avenue that is feeding the aggression in the south. Haiphong Harbor is the sea route that's feeding it. I think that the Viet Cong and Hanoi are going to have to be deprived of those facilities.
Republican Senator Jacob Javits of New York talked about American power.
We're capable of great escalation of force. And of course, we possess the military might to inflict unacceptable damage on our opponents. But I do not believe that Americans want to use that power at the risk of a nuclear war, or more probably, a nation land war on a large scale.
But of all those who had things to say to the Legionnaires, the man they most wanted to hear was the Commander-in-Chief, Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Unless we have the imagination to understand what is happening in the world, we may very well find ourselves, together with all of our friends, among the highly developed nations, but facing a series of explosive crises in which our military involvement is urgently at issue.
And to the veterans of other American wars, the president had a parting word.
My fellow Americans, you have demonstrated in many places at many hours that you love your country. So let us not fail her promise for all mankind. Thank you and goodbye.
And as the president left the American Legion Convention Hall in Washington, another week of words about Vietnam was going into history. The words of De Gaulle and Dirksen, Rusk and U Thant, Nixon and Johnson. And none of them succeeded in stopping the war, ending communist terrorism, or leaving the people of Vietnam in peace. For while those men talked and searched for a way to peace, there were no words of promise, no pleas for peace, from the one place where one word could stop the war. Hanoi was silent.
He said you do not want to discuss nothing with Negroes.
When his time is up, he ain't got to worry about coming back.
Every time he want to get elected, he come down here and get a vote.
Because all the Negroes down here do want peace.
Those, the voices of Negroes in Waukegan, Illinois, after racial disorders in Waukegan on Sunday night. ABC's Don Farmer questioned Waukegan's mayor, Robert Sabanjan.
They say they want to either meet with you or present their grievances to you. You're willing to listen to them, I assume?
Listen, these people know exactly what they have done wrong. There is no meetings. All they have to do is act like human beings and decent people. There's no necessity for any meetings. I'm not going to dignify these people. Who are they to ask for a meeting with the mayor or anybody else when all they have to do is straighten out and walk like human beings and talk like human beings and act like human beings?
Calm was restored to Waukegan's south side when police sealed off a 35-block area of the city. But Mayor Sabanjan told ABC that his city's troubles did not come from the general Negro population. Mayor Sabanjan said,
these are people who have been known to have long police records, dope addicts, drunkards, winos, and just general scum. And I lay a lot of this responsibility on the foot of the NAACP because I had asked them a week ago to desist from these demonstrations, but they insisted on going ahead with their announcements of proposed demonstrations.
Waukegan was only one of a number of American cities caught up in racial rioting. There was trouble in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, where Negroes protested against membership in an all-white club by Circuit Judge Robert Cannon, and where National Guard troops were called out to help keep order. In Benton Harbor, Michigan, gangs of Negroes roamed the city, throwing rocks at cars and stores, and Mayor Wilbert Smith met with Negroes to talk about the problems. Mayor Smith told ABC,
if they do not cooperate, if they feel that we're insincere and not going to meet these requests, then I think that if this continues, it'll be time to call the National Guard in.
During the Benton Harbor troubles, Governor George Romney of Michigan issued a warning.
I will
take whatever additional steps may be necessary to maintain law and order. We will maintain law and order in Gun Harbor in that area. It isn't going to take us long to move if we have to move.
But some of the worst racial rioting was in Dayton, Ohio. ABC's Don Farmer was there on Thursday night.
The Negro section of Dayton is a place of violence at this hour. Police report sporadic outbreaks of shooting in the streets. Already, more than 100 persons have been arrested through the day and evening hours. National Guardsmen and police are on patrol trying to stop the rioting and looting. Don Farmer, ABC, in Dayton, Ohio.
The situation in Dayton was a dangerous one, and the National Guard was called out. General Heber Minton, Adjutant General of the Ohio National Guard, told ABC,
"The situation was out of hand, so Governor Rhodes directed that the Adjutant General order out between 700 and 900 guardsmen for duty in Dayton, Ohio. These guardsmen will be used to reinforce the police department. They'll be taking their orders from the police department, and our activities will be controlled by the police department."
Officials at Dayton, Ohio, were concerned about law and order even at week's end and were worried about the scheduled appearance in Dayton on Labor Day by President Johnson.
We shall
Another possibly dangerous situation loomed during the Labor Day weekend as some Negro organizations planned to march into Cicero, Illinois, a march that would underscore the growing gap between some militant Negro groups and the followers of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King was speaking to a Chicago rally on Thursday night when an advocate of black power interrupted the speech. Dr. King turned his attention to a member of SNCC and offered an invitation.
"Come on, you want to talk on black power? Come right on. This is a free, democratic society, freedom of speech, and we have a brother who wants to speak on black power. We're going to hear him."
Joining Dr. King on the platform at the Chicago rally was SNCC's Monroe Sharp.
"Beside tramp, tramp, tramp through white folks' neighborhoods, you know, I'm not totally opposed to that. But see, we got to tramp, tramp, tramp through some black neighborhoods."
But it was into a white neighborhood, into all-white Cicero, that a Sunday march was planned by Negro groups led by CORE. Robert Lucas of CORE told ABC about CORE's plans for the march into segregated Cicero.
"CORE's position is this demonstration is one of nonviolence. There is not and never was any intention to attack anyone."
To help Cicero officials keep order during the Sunday march, Illinois Governor Otto Kerner ordered National Guard troops to Cicero. And one of Governor Kerner's assistants, Chris Vlahopoulos, had a statement to read.
"I express my deep disappointment that the march leadership has ignored appeals to cancel or postpone their demonstrations. I sincerely hope that continuing appeals, based on concern for the safety of their fellow citizens, moves this leadership at this, the 11th hour."
A troubled weekend, after a troubled week, and a troubled summer. The Labor Day weekend is traditionally a time for speech-making by the President of the United States. And when the Labor Day weekend comes during a political year, the President is expected to be on the hustings. And so it was for Lyndon Johnson. The Labor Day weekend was the third weekend for getting out to see the people. This time, the people of West Virginia and Pennsylvania. Our ABC microphones with the president all the way and got this sampling of the president's barnstorming techniques.
"We're on the move. We're on the go. People are working. People are eating. They have high hopes. Their schools are being improved. Their hospitals are being improved. We are doing what a democratic president, a democratic government ought to do for a democratic people.
We have committed ourselves to a Water for Peace program. We'll sponsor an international conference on water for peace in Washington next May 23rd.
We will build you not promises, but we put it there in concrete and steel. You see things going forward. You see things getting done."
The president says he hopes to get into all 50 states, and so far he's visited 10. Some other voices in the headlines this week. The State Department's Robert McCloskey with word about a spy.
"The chargé d'affaires of the Soviet embassy was called into the Department of State and handed a note requesting the immediate departure from this country. of the third secretary at the Soviet embassy, Valentin Revin. Revin has engaged in activities clearly incompatible with his diplomatic status during his assignment in the United States, that is, attempting to obtain classified information from an American citizen in return for large sums of money. The Federal Bureau of Investigation thwarted these attempts.
From a spy caught out in the cold to an administration official in a hot seat, as Assistant Defense Secretary Arthur Sylvester talked about news reporting from Vietnam under the questioning of the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Senator J. William Fulbright.
Who makes the decision as to whether or not any given bit of information threatens the safety of our fighting men? Do you make that decision?
No, I do not, Mr.
Who does?
That decision has been made, and a certain number of ground rules have been accepted by newsmen in Vietnam as a consequence of considerations by General Westmoreland and his commanders. They are very few, but important.
While Arthur Sylvester and members of the Senate talked about the effects and problems of news reporting from Vietnam, ABC Radio News discovered again the impact of its own reporting in a story that may not have much to say for it compared with the great issues of Vietnam, de Gaulle's independent attitude toward Americans, or the sophisticated problems of the booming American economy. But still, the kind of news story that's any newsman's dream, a human interest story to warm the heart. ABC's Arthur Van Horn reported the story of a 14-year-old Memphis, Tennessee boy who had been living in the sewers of Memphis. A sad story, to be sure. But a listener to ABC affiliate KBON in Omaha heard Art Van Horn report that story. The listener called Van Horn's story to the attention of Father Flanagan's Boys Town, and Monsignor Nicholas Wegner sent off a telegram to juvenile officer Frank Mikorski in Memphis, volunteering to help the boy. Just minutes later, Mr. Mikorski talked to ABC News on the phone and told us,
"This is a wonderful opportunity. I will contact Father Wegner and talk with him and see what can be arranged on this thing, and maybe something can be worked out, because the boy, I think he's about ready for an opportunity."
So went This World This Week and the voices in the headlines.
Voices in the Headlines, a presentation of ABC Radio News, written and produced by H. Paul Jeffers, directed by Bill Gately, executive producer Tom O'Brien, audio engineering by Gene Carlson, John Snell, and Bob Douglas, your narrator, Fred Foy. This is Paul Coughlin inviting you to keep up with the news every hour of every day on this ABC Radio News station, and to catch up on the news each week on Voices in the Headlines.